You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
You're listening to Smashed from The Ensemblist, the only podcast that shows you Broadway from the inside out.
I'm Mo Brady.
And I'm Aaron Albano.
Welcome back, listeners, to our tongue-in-cheek recap of what is still the Broadway community's favorite TV show, Smash. Yes, we're talking about the NBC series that aired from 2012 to 2013.
Smash was also an incredible glimpse into the theater community in the early 2010s, as many of the show's writers, actors, and dancers were played by real Broadway performers with real Broadway cred.
But we wanted to go back in time to see how the show has weathered, what it got right, and what it got very, very wrong. So let's dive in and talk about Season 1, Episode 3, Enter Mr. DiMaggio. Aaron, give us the stats.
Okay, Mo. Enter Mr. DiMaggio premiered on February 20th, 2012. It was written by Teresa Rebeck and directed by Michael Mayer.
He's directed all three of the first three episodes.
Yeah, they both. Mr. Rebeck wrote it, wrote all three episodes, and Michael Mayer has directed all three so far. Now, here's where viewership gets a little fun. This is the first week where ratings take into account households with DVR. 2012.
Welcome.
Apparently, this week's episode had a live viewership of 6.5 million, which is about 1.5 million down from last week. But including DVR viewership, the episode had a total of 8.7 million viewers, which was 0.65 more than the week before. Oof, so much math.
6.5 million people. How many weeks in a Broadway show would you have to run in order to reach 6.5 million people?
Oh, goodness. So many.
Yeah. If you had a theater that had 2,100 seats, right? Okay.
Yeah,
so let's take 6.5 million. We divide by 2,100. So you'd have to perform on Broadway for 74 years without a day off in order to reach 6.5 million people.
LOL. That's too many. And and yet, like, 6.5 million was like, oh, they're doing so bad.
You're right.
Anyway, let's talk about the world we live in.
Let's talk about the songs.
Oh, yeah. So the episode only had one original song by Mark Shaiman and Scott Whitman, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. But two covers were also featured, Bruno Mars's Grenade, sung by Will Chase, and Redneck Woman by Gretchen Williams, sung by Catherine McPhee. And what happens in this episode, Mo?
Well, it's only 3 weeks until rehearsals begin for the workshop of the new Broadway-bound musical Bombshell. However, other than a great idea that may or may not have been stolen from composer Tom Hewitt's assistant, Ellis, up-and-coming ensemblist Ivy Lynn wonders if the only reason Derek gave her the part for the workshop is because she slept with him. He doesn't seem to give her any reason to think otherwise, spending his energy on courting Karen for a role in the ensemble. Meanwhile, the creative team hunts for the rest of the workshop's cast. They think they've found their leading man, Joe DiMaggio, in Michael Swift, played by Will Chase. Since he is offer only, Ellen and Derek scout him out at an off-Broadway show.
That Bruno Mars jukebox musical.
We're going to talk about that.
Okay.
But it turns out Michael Swift has a past with our lyricist Julia Houston. They had an affair 5 years ago.
Dun, dun, dun.
Karen's parents are still worried about her, but she stands up to them, saying that being in the chorus of a workshop is so much bigger than many people get to do. Dennis tells Tom that Derek and Ivy are dating. Julia confides in Tom about her affair, which Ellis overhears, but Ellis makes his own mistakes, stealing Julia's notebook of ideas for Bombshell, as well as sleeping with his friend, maybe girlfriend, maybe roommate, played by Condola Rashad. All right, favorite performance by an ensemblist. Who did we see in this episode?
Well, there weren't very many ensemble numbers.
Yeah.
There was a number in the Bruno Mars jukebox musical.
Right. We saw two. We saw one in the Bruno Mars musical, which had three men, and then one woman played by Tony nominee Corinne Plenity.
Yes.
Right. And they're performing a strange performance of Bruno Mars's Grenade, which then has her dancing with three ensemble men.
And with Will Chase.
Right. What did you think about that number?
I mean, I live for the number. It felt so, like, downtown and so off-Broadway as it was meant to.
Was an off-Broadway show going to have a Bruno Mars song in it? I don't know. It felt...
isn't the whole show is Bruno Mars Wasn't it a jukebox? I thought they were talking that
When would there be a Bruno Mars jukebox musical off Broadway? If Bruno Mars is going to license his music, it's not going to be for off Broadway.
Fair. That is real. That is super real. Okay. Logic aside, I thought the number was good.
Sure. I mean, she's a fantastic dancer. She moves singularly.
She's stunning.
Yeah.
She's stunning. She was stunning in Come Fly Away. She's stunning in this.
This definitely felt like a, wow, we really like Carine. Can we get her on TV? Like she doesn't have any lines. She doesn't do anything except for just like dance amazingly at you. And you sort of get a sense of this off-Broadway show.
Well, I mean, she does have, in the best way, this wild quality to her movement. And that was in that way, because they were singing to Grenade. It was sort of foreshadowing his place in the world of our characters.
Right.
And so with him portraying this wild, unpredictable presence coming into our writing duo, it was the perfect woman for him to dance with. What was your favorite ensemblist moment in the show?
Well, we didn't get a lot of performances, mm-hmm. right? We get the Bruno Mars show and then we get the karaoke at the end.
Yes.
Right. But my favorite moment goes to Jessica Lee Golden, who has the line as she's walking out of the dressing room.
This was iconic.
We'll be at Vintage.
R.I.P. Vintage.
R.I.P. Vintage. So Vintage is
a wine bar.
It was just a wine bar.
51st and 9th?
Right.
A few years back, lots of years back, where I think Atlas Social Club
is
what it is now.
Okay.
Yeah, it was right next to the Snug. It was right.
You're naming all of these places that are closed now.
Yeah.
Ninth Avenue's changing over, New York. Anyway, I just loved that moment because that felt very authentic.
It was amazing. It was so beautifully insidery.
Yes.
I remember while we were watching it back when it was airing, everyone like latched onto that line and just started saying it for the next year and a half. It was great.
Moments that scream 2012.
R.I.P. Vintage.
R.I.P. Vintage. Bonnie and Clyde is up on the marquee. I love these shots where we get to look down 44th or 45th Street, and we get to see what's up on the marquee.
Because that's what makes it the most time capsule.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you know exactly when in this was shot and when it essentially takes place.
Right. Are you ready for Albano fact check?
Sure.
All right. Here we go. Ivy has a Heaven on Earth poster hanging above her bed. So this is an adult woman in an adult woman's apartment in New York City.
Okay.
And above her bed, where she does adult woman things, is a poster for her currently running Broadway show. Is that something that you would really do? It was framed.
Yeah. Okay. Then that makes it better.
Okay.
I feel like,
First off, there's putting your show posters in your house, right? Like, that's a choice.
And I think it's, before we start, like, shaming people with stuff in their house, myself included. It is good to be proud of what you've done and be good.
Sure. I'm sure you have your Tony Award sitting on a shelf somewhere.
Absolutely. Right in the center of my dining room.
There's something about a show poster that just screams, maybe it's because it's marketing to me, where I know there's plenty of actors that we love, who we work with, who have show posters framed in their houses.
Oh, no, totally.
Are you one of them?
Not posters. I have playbills.
Okay. Do you have them in your bedroom?
No.
Okay. For some reason, in your bedroom just feels like another level to me.
Well, I think what's worse, it's not even that it's the placement of the bedroom. We've already established that Ivy, this is her entire world.
Right. So she's been in Wicked for a year.
She's been in Wicked for a year. Where's the Wicked poster?
Yeah, right?
I'm literally like, there's no other pictures of anything else. I feel like that's more telling to me than her current show in her bedroom. I'm like, where's the rest of your life?
So it's not a poor choice by the set decorator of Smash. It's a real character.
I think so. Okay. Yeah, because literally, this is the woman that has Marilyn pictures around her dressing room station at her Broadway show before she even had the job.
Whew.
Like I said, this is a very specific woman that we're watching.
I feel like this whole podcast series is just an exercise in turning me from Team Ivy to Team Karen. One more thing that screams 2012 is when Karen is going back to the airport after visiting her family.
Mm-hmm.
Her friends pick her up to drive her to the airport.
Oh,
do you remember when you had to do that?
Yeah.
Now you'd just be like, I'm going to call an Uber.
I'm going to call a Lyft.
I think that's the biggest RIP. Bigger than the Brill Building is getting a ride.
Getting a ride from your friends to the airport?
Yeah.
Well, the best part is like, your friends want to bring you to the airport.
And all of them.
Like all three of them want to bring you to the airport when your parents are right there.
Yeah.
Jenny Barber, you have a baby. on the way.
Does seem like being pregnant would be like the thing that gets you out of driving friends to the airport.
Exactly. It's like, no, put your feet up.
Analysis.
Okay. Okay.
First off, drink to the face count. We're at 2.
Are we? Okay. Yes.
Do we jump back into chorus shaming so quickly?
There's a lot of it in this
episode. There's a lot of chorus shaming.
There's a
lot
of it in this episode. Right.
Leanne, Karen's coworker at the bar, she says, don't call it the chorus. It's the ensemble. So we are feeling sort of semi-woke in this moment.
But then she says, backs right back up.
Although if you ask me, that's calling a garbage collector a sanitation worker.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I was like, you must be joking. I was like, firstly, well, okay, let's go back to this. What do you feel is the distinction between calling the chorus of a show chorus versus ensemble?
All right. To me, chorus, we don't really see a lot of choruses on Broadway anymore because everyone is wearing so many hats and so many specific hats. I think about chorus as like 42nd Street, right? There's lots of women. They don't have names. We don't know who they are. They're all there to do the same thing at the same time with different spacing.
Okay.
Versus an ensemble, if I'm going to parse...
More a group of individuals, I guess.
Right, working together.
Okay, I could buy that.
Which is why I think then we can say things like, Godspell is an ensemble musical, because those are 10 individuals who are sharing the story, but they're really working together in order to do that.
And therefore, that's why chorus is so... is
derogatory.
Yeah.
Because chorus means that you don't care about that person's individuality.
And you have no identity outside of being in this group. Okay, so, now I get on board with
but
that.
But I don't think that's a universally held opinion about chorus versus ensemble. I think that for most people, even a lot of people in our industry, we just called them the chorus before and now we call them the ensemble.
Yeah, but that's the case for like putting them down.
Right.
Okay, I could buy that a little bit.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
What's your take on chorus versus ensemble?
No, I honestly didn't know. And all I could think of was like, well, in the derogatory sense, I'm like, you'll refer to people as chorus boys and chorus girls.
And it's not the word, it's how you use it.
Exactly.
Also.
But yeah, I mean, like, there's so many moments... This is the episode where chorus shaming takes a big jump and they're all sort of directed toward Karen to make her feel bad that she's in the ensemble.
Right. Jack offers Karen a part in the workshop's ensemble, but in the same breath tells her, you have way too much talent to be in the ensemble.
And she's like, that would be great. And he's like, aren't you mad? And she's like, essentially being like, am I supposed to be mad? He offers the, well, you're too good to be in the ensemble.
Why would you give someone a job while simultaneously telling them they're too good for the job?
Yeah.
Yeah. The more I look into how Derek looks at a star versus an ensemble track, mm-hmm. the less I understand. When I think about the best, busiest directors, director choreographers, mm-hmm. which Derek is, those people came out of the ensemble.
Yeah.
Andy Blankenbuehler, Casey Nicholaw, Dennis Jones, Joanne Hunter, mm-hmm. Lauren Lotaro.
Yeah.
Like, these are all people who have ensemblist cred and so wouldn't talk about a director and so wouldn't talk about an ensemble member without
such disdain.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little weird that Derek would do such a thing because you would assume, because that's the normal trajectory of director choreographers, you would assume his backstory would be he also came from the business, came from the came from the ensemble, like rode his way up the chain of
industry. Or at least was probably a choreographer and then a director choreographer. Yes. So he worked with ensemble members.
And so what is this ugliness? I don't know. Because that is not the only example of that begins. But then thank God for Karen at the end, because she's talking to her parents? Mm-hmm. And she says, I wrote it all down. Do you know that even being in the chorus of a workshop is so much bigger than so many people ever get to do? This is good, what's happening to me. It's good. I'm good. And I was like, yes, Karen. It's the healthiest perspective to have for someone who's just starting out, even for someone who's not just starting out.
Right.
And everyone is like poo-pooing it. It's like, no, you deserve more. No, you didn't. I was like, okay, maybe she does, but like, this is a great opportunity.
Yeah.
This is wonderful. She's working with these people that she's never worked with before.
All of those things that I feel like we would actually say to someone who booked a workshop for a Broadway-bound musical never get said to her.
Yeah. Even if in the first scene she's like, in her head, she's like, oh, I wish I'd gotten Marilyn. What she's saying to Derek is wonderful. And maybe she's even saying it to convince herself that, yes, this is a wonderful thing. And I don't think that's out of line either. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes you need to talk yourself into being like, no, this is great. Stop being so negative about what's happening to you, because it's actually great.
Well, special thanks to Aaron Albano for joining us for this mini-series. You can learn more about him and how to connect with him online by visiting our website, theensemblist.com.
Are you enjoying the Smash miniseries? If you are, let us know on any of our social media platforms. Recapping and analyzing episodes of Smash was a crazy idea that we had, and so we're considering these first few episodes a trial run. If you're having as much fun as we are, let us know, and we'll keep going.
Meanwhile, to stay part of our ongoing Smash analysis, Smash analysis?
That works.
Be sure to watch the next episode, The Cost of Art, before next week's recap. You can find all episodes of Smash either on the NBC app or at NBC.com. The Ensemblist was produced today by me, Mo Brady.
Please help others find out about The Ensemblist by leaving us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. You can also download episodes wherever you get your podcasts or at theensemblist.com.
Follow The Ensemblist on Instagram to see the latest posts from our website, where we share the stories of talented artists working in Broadway ensembles. Thanks for listening, guys.
Until next time.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.